Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will take an exclusive look at what some countries in sub-Saharan Africa are doing to address newborn and maternal health, among other things. We have some very special guests in the studio today. Joining us is first from Nigeria, Dr. Abosede Aderinan. Sorry, doctor. I am so sorry for butchering your name. So let me do this again. Dr. Abosede Aderinan. I can do this. She is Director and Head of Child Health Division, Family Health Department with Federal Ministry of Health of Nigeria. Again, Dr. Abosede, thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Great. And now coming to us from Nigeria is Dr. Jacqueline Umunyana. She's Senior Program Learning and Scale-Up Advisor with USAID's Flagship Maternal and Child Survival Program in Rwanda. Dr. Umunyana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great. I am so excited to have these two fabulous ladies with me to discuss such important topics. So let's start with you from Nigeria. Not long ago, I actually had the Minister of Health, and I also had the CEO of the Nigeria Centers for Disease Control.
Okay.
Yes, so I've been talking to a lot of a representative from the Nigeria health system, and I wanted to ask you first and foremost, just to give us a sense of where things are, if you were just to tell us with regards to we just left the Millennium Development Goals and then we're moving forward with the Sustainable Development Goals. How are things with regards to maternal and child health? What is your appreciation of the situation?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. As you said, the SDGs was rounded up in 2015 and that dovetails into the Sustainable Development Goal. And countries have been requested to ensure that all their policies as it relates to maternal, newborn, child health, even adolescent and elderly aligns with the aims and aspiration of the Sustainable Development Goals. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have been able to do in Nigeria. The Honorable Minister of Health, during his tenure, we've been able to revise the National Health Policy, which is the overarching policy on health sector. And in addition to that, we've also, and that has been launched in Nigeria in 2016, in addition to that, we've also developed the National Strategic Health Development Plan. That's the second edition based on the National Health Policy. Mm-hmm. And key domain in that strategy document is the issue of reproductive, maternal, newborn and child health. So you can see the importance
big topic that
has been attached to that, because
yes,
we want to change the narrative in Nigeria as it relates to the indices. We are not there yet, but now we are moving from motion to action. And that's why the policy documents are there to provide the enabling environment. You also know that it's a decentralized system that we run in Nigeria. The mandate at the federal level is to provide a strategic direction as it relates to that, which we have been doing. And state, the implementation is at the state level. The good news is that the state, too, have developed their own state strategic health development plan.
Okay.
With respect to the SDG. And they've commenced implementation.
Very interesting. And you said something that we want to change the narrative about Nigeria. One of the things that we hear all the time is Nigeria is one of the countries that has the highest maternal mortality rate in the world. And when we hear you say we want to change the narrative, it's very interesting to see some of the efforts that are being made. So what is the biggest challenge you face in keeping, let's talk about babies, in keeping newborns alive?
Thank you very much. As I said, the narrative are not good for us. Nigeria contributes a significant number to newborn deaths globally. And in country, 62% of the births of the newborn takes place outside the health facility. That's the biggest challenge that we have.
Okay.
It's taking place at home within the community. That's a challenge. Number two is a poor healthcare-seeking behavior of the caregivers. The caregivers, they don't know the danger signs, when to seek for health services.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, we have a very weak referral system that even if a newborn has a birth complication or infection or due to prematurity, there are challenges in referring that newborn to the next level for healthcare. So those are the key things that are really affecting us taking care of the newborn.
Okay, and we will definitely talk more to see how some of these challenges are being addressed. Now, I'm turning to you, Dr. Umunyana, and we go from Nigeria, where the rhetoric is not very encouraging, but we know things are being done, to Rwanda, where we've heard so many good news, right? Rwanda was one of the countries, African countries, to really make some progress and meet some of the Millennium Development Goals, health targets, and other things. So tell us... if you are to give us an assessment of how all of this has been accomplished, what would you tell us in terms of perhaps the approach or what make Rwanda such a successful story?
Okay, thank you. I think it is true that Rwanda met the targets for MDGs. And one of the things that are in place, it's good leadership and our commitment. And one of the things that we did is putting strategies and policies in place that were tackling maternal and newborn health issues. So, and I should say that we focused on evidence-based and data use so that they can be able to look at the gaps and be able to address those gaps at a timely manner.
So you talk about... you know, evidence-based, and what type of intervention, if we were to be more specific? Can you give us perhaps one example of intervention that have been implemented or is being implemented to ensure that babies are born in a healthy condition and they survive the first month, or the first year, the first 5 years of their lives?
Okay, I think now I can talk on behalf of USAID's MSSP, which is Maternal and Child Survival Program.
Okay.
Where we, since the country encourages evidence-based strategies, I think one of the things that USAID is supporting the country to do, it is to implement those interventions.
Okay.
So what we are doing, it is, a strategy, it's a capacity building strategy. As I said, since we achieved most of the target for MDGs, now we are looking at how can we sustain the gains so that we don't go, we don't lag behind, so that we, you know, we keep moving forward. So it's now about capacity building of the providers and be able to provide quality services in terms of, I mean, for the maternal and child health. So the intervention now that we are implementing, it's a low-cost, high-impact intervention, which is where we work with providers at the facility level, and they don't have to come to the to a classroom kind of training, but we find them at their workplaces and give them that kind of capacity. We also continue to work with the providers through what we call mentorship. It is a mentorship program so that I can be able to retain knowledge and skills. So I should say that based on the government priorities, MSSP supported the government to reduce the death due to birth asphyxia. Birth asphyxia is when the baby cannot be able to breathe at birth. So where it was one of the leading cause of neonatal death, that is according to Rwanda Demographic Health Survey in 2014-2015,
okay.
Because it was at 20 deaths per 1,000 live births. So that is, I told you we focus on data. We have different sources of data. But when we analyzed further to say what was the really specific causes of neonatal death, birth asphyxia was the leading cause. And that is how MSSP intervened and worked with the government to reduce neonatal death due to birth asphyxia. As of now, Thanks to that capacity building, we're in 10 districts out of 30 districts. That is a good coverage.
Mm-hmm.
We managed to reduce birth asphyxia. Now it is at 33%. So that was a good progress, and it is no longer the leading cause of neonatal death.
Very interesting. Yeah. Now, Dr. Abosede, let me come back to you. An estimated 1 in 4 neonatal deaths in Nigeria in 2016 were due to preventable infections, and many of them could have been prevented through proper care of the umbilical cord. We understand that the umbilical cord is such an important part of the whole birthing process, which connects the mom to the baby. And even when it's removed, there is still, you know, something there that needs to be taken care of. So tell us about the scope of the problem first, and then we will discuss what is being done, because my understanding is that Nigeria is really looking into this issue to tackle it.
Thank you very much. As I said, the three major causes of newborn deaths in Nigeria, one is prematurity,
mm-hmm.
the second one is complications from birth, that is birth asphyxia, and the third one is sepsis. And we've seen that the major source of the sepsis is the infection of the umbilical cord. Saying this, the government of Nigeria has been proactive. As I've said, the newborn is on the agenda of the current regime to ensure that a newborn, that they survive and they thrive and they reach their full potential. So based on this, we commence the introduction of cloxacillin, because evidence are there from the pilot study that was done in Sokoto and Bauchi, that mm-hmm. was done in 2012 to 2013, that if the cloxacillin gel is used, it's going to reduce cord infection and prevent sepsis. So following the gains from the pilot study in Sokoto and Bauchi, the government of Nigeria said we need to sustain the momentum. And based on this, we commence the scale-up process. We are doing it also in line with WHO recommendation, okay. that the new recommendation as relates to cord care management, that countries where they have high home births, which Nigeria is about 62%, where the neonatal mortality rate is above 30 per 1,000 live births, and where they have high practice of harmful traditional practices. Because we know in Nigeria, all sorts of things are used for cord management. They use methylated spirit, they use toothpaste, they use cow dung. So those are the things that are contributing. So we fit into those criteria. Based on this, we said we need to implement the cloxacillin.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we started with the development of a strategy. So in Nigeria now, we now have a costed national strategy on the cloxacillin with clear rules and responsibility
mm-hmm.
for state and the local government. And the key goal of that strategy is that by the fifth year, we intend to have increased the uptake of cloxacillin by 52%, and that is likely to reduce the neonatal death by 55,000 deaths by the end of the fifth year. So that's what the vision of the strategy is all about. And the strategy has now been translated into action by the state. As I said, it's decentralization.
Okay.
The implementation is at the state level. So the states have started running with it. They have developed all the 36 states and the Federal Capital Territory have developed their own state action plan to implement cloxacillin. They have even gone ahead to integrate it into the state strategic health development plan.
Oh,
so, okay. Yes, in addition to that, the states have also revised their essential medicine list to include the cloxacillin, because it's what is in the list that the governor will procure.
Yes.
So you are sure that it's in the list, definitely it will be procured. In addition to that, the state have even started mobilizing resources to procure the cloxacillin. From the data we have, about 19 states have procured cloxacillin.
Okay.
And additional 7 states have been supported by our partners
mm-hmm.
to also procure cloxacillin, because without the cloxacillin, you can't implement any program. In addition to that, we have also gone ahead, because you need to ensure an enabling policy environment. We have also included cloxacillin in all the training packages.
Okay.
For our health workers,
mm-hmm.
both for pre-service and in-service. So we are now running an integrated approach chloroxidine has been included in all training packages, in all health policies that has any relevance to maternal and child health. And the good news is that, as I've said, if there is no chloroxidine, that means no products, there will be no program. Nigeria is the only country that has four pharmaceuticals that are producing chloroxidine on the African continent.
Really?
Yes. And it started with the way they were engaged, telling them what the problem is. And they bought into the idea that we need to change, our newborn must survive. And we started in 2014 with one drug company. Today we have four of them that are producing chloroxidine. Mm-hmm. And seeing the availability of the commodities, the government have seen the commitment from the private sector. You can say that's a good public-private partnership. And government has gone ahead to give them as an incentive that the active ingredient that they use, that they normally import, mm-hmm. government has removed, has given them the waiver not to pay that import duties on the active ingredient, pharmaceutical ingredient. So they are not going to pay the 5%, but the 5% has now been put on finished products that are being brought into the country. So you can see the incentive, yes, and the enabling environment that has been provided for us. So we have this, and with those four companies, job opportunities has been available too for our youths and the mm-hmm. adolescents. So those are the kind of things that has been happening. And this can only happen when you are scaling or when you have a good leader. Mm-hmm. Leadership is key. Mm-hmm. Partnership is also key, and coordination.
Very, very good point there. I think these are very interesting. This is a conversation that I really enjoy because it's good to see the different perspective and how countries are making strides in whether it's to improve what is already been there or to maintain and make sure that you don't fall back. So we are going to continue this very interesting conversation with my fantastic guests, Dr. Abosede Adeniran from Nigeria and Dr. Jacqueline Umunyana from Rwanda. We will be back in a few minutes, but don't go away because it's night now. Time for the news with Abigail Belay.
The World Health Organization says Ebola has killed 19 people in Congo and a total of 39 cases have been reported in the northwestern Equator province. The WHO says the infected also includes three healthcare workers. The town of Bikoro is the center of the current outbreak. Congo's Ministry of Health and the WHO are tracing contacts of the victims and offering them an experimental Ebola vaccine. The WHO says the vaccine has been tested in thousands of volunteers in Europe, Africa, and the United States, and was judged safe for humans. Ebola, which causes a hemorrhagic fever, is spread by direct contact with bodily fluids of an infected person or animal. Saudi Arabia has been put on high alert after reports of a possible Al-Qurma outbreak spread across the Middle East and North African region. Al-Qurma is a type of hemorrhagic fever that can be that can cause bleeding from the eyes, nose, ears, and other parts of the body. The last mention of such an outbreak was back in 1995. Other hemorrhagic fevers related to that of Al-Qurma is the Ebola disease. The virus has been regarded as a fairly new discovery and was only really seen in the Jeddah region of Saudi Arabia. The hemorrhagic fever is known for being transferred through the ticks and can be transferred by being bit or crushing a tick. Contact with domestic animals and livestock carrying the virus increases the risk of infection. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Thank you. That was Abigail Belay with the news, and welcome back. For those of you joining us late, my name is Lenore Mudu. You are listening to Health Chat, and today we have a special discussion on addressing maternal and child health in a couple of countries in sub-Saharan Africa, especially Rwanda, and Nigeria. And my special guests are Dr. Abu Sede Adeniran. She is Director of, and Head of Child Health Division, Family Health Department at the Federal Ministry of Health in Nigeria. And also Dr. Jacqueline Umunyana. She's Senior Program Learning and Scale-Up Advisor at USAID's flagship maternal and child survival program. So, Dr. Jackie, I call you Jackie. Okay. So, Dr. Jackie, listen, so let's talk about where in Rwanda you are working and how you have applied a concentrated training approach. Let's talk about training and capacity building. First of all, where in Rwanda are you working?
So we are supporting 10 districts out of 30 districts. And we work with referral hospitals according to the health system. There's referral hospital, provincial hospital, district hospital, health center. That is how the structure is. But where we're working, it is a continuum of care, right from the central level to the community level. So we believe that it is always good to provide a continuum of care in order to have a universal coverage of services. So we work with those districts. We support them in different capacities, but for the newborn, if I can just focus on that one,
yes,
or maternal, it's just we give them the capacity so that they can be able to deal with maternal and newborn issues. That's why I was saying that we have a Helping Babies Breathe program. It will be unfortunate for a mother to carry a baby for 9 months,
yeah,
and when the baby is born, cannot breathe while the provider is there. So that is what we put more effort,
mm-hmm,
because it was one of the government priorities to reduce neonatal death. Mm-hmm. And hence, birth asphyxia was the leading cause. We dealt with the leading cause of neonatal death. So I think that is one of the achievements we have so far, besides other achievements in maternal newborn health, even child health.
Yes.
But we focus on the quality of services right from the hospital level to the community level. We have, we support even community health workers. In Rwanda, we have a very strong community health workers program,
okay,
because they support newborns and pregnant women at the community level,
mm-hmm,
so that if there's any problem at the community level, they can bring them at the facility level.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And the role of community workers is so, so important. And Dr. Abosede, I wanted you to react on this topic, because in this strategy to improve maternal and child health, what is the role of the community workers, and to what extent do you utilize them in helping you to implement these programs?
Thank you very much. As I said, the role of the community health workers is because it's extremely important if we must change the narrative. Currently, in Nigeria, we have two levels of community health workers, because within the community there, we have what we call community resource persons.
Mm-hmm.
These are just people that have been identified by the village heads, has ability to read and write. They've not really gone to, they can read and write. The other level of the community health extension worker is that the community health extension workers, these are people that have gone to the School of Health Technology,
okay,
for either for 2 years or 3 years, but they are in the health facility. So while we implemented an intervention to also to reduce under 5 mortality rate, we call it the Integrated Community Case Management of Childhood Illnesses, we utilize these community resource persons. They were trained for 6 days on Integrated Community Case Management of Childhood Illnesses. And they are providing services based on algorithm that has been given to them. And they are being supervised,
okay,
by those community health extension workers that are the health facility.
Mm-hmm.
And if a child is brought to them and they cannot manage the child, that child is referred to the health facility for the community health extension workers, who is their supervisor, to look after. So the community health system in Nigeria is evolving very well.
Okay.
The latest strategy the Mr. President just launched is the strategy what we call CHIPS. That is the Community Health Influencers Program. It's also the communities that have been identified within the, but they will be provide, they are volunteers.
Okay.
They are not on the salary of government.
Okay.
When you compare it to the community health extension workers in the health facilities, these are volunteers that has been identified within the community that are supposed to provide service. Mm-hmm. So they are not salary paid, but they are given a stipend as motivation for them to continue to do this work. But they are, to me, I think the time is ripe. We need to take healthcare delivery to the community.
Yes. Big challenge.
We need to take it to the community. They are part of the health system. So taking it to the community, whatever they cannot manage, they now refer to the health facility. So that's what is on ground in Nigeria as it relates to that.
Very interesting. Taking health to the community, how does this translate in the program, some of the program that you have mentioned? Is it... Talk to us about the community health workers and how do you train them in terms of their knowledge? Do they have to have some kind of knowledge? Do you choose them from a medical school, or you just work with volunteers from the community? Or how does this work? I know that Dr. Abosede kind of detailed a little bit for us what their strategy is. What is yours in Rwanda?
Okay, the strategy in Rwanda, it is somehow different, but similar to the voluntary work that community health workers do in Nigeria.
Okay.
But for us, it's purely voluntary,
okay.
And it is at the village level. The village members elect community health workers, but there are some criteria that they have to meet. Like they have to be able to read and write. That is one of the major criteria, and at least finished primary school.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that respect in the community. Mm-hmm. They are respected in the community. So since they are elected by the village members, they respect them, and they have this...
there is a trust
yeah,
factor.
Yeah, there is a trust. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we give them the support. They have cooperatives so that they can manage, have a living. Mm-hmm. Those cooperatives that are income generating.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they also have, depending on the need, if they need some communication, they do that. So for the training, the facility, they do train them. People from the health center level, mm-hmm. they train community health workers.
Okay.
And they also supervise. But for this mentorship program, we mentor them. In mm-hmm. the, yeah, so they also provide, they treat pneumonia, malaria, mm-hmm. they can manage fevers, pregnant mothers, if they have issues, they refer them to the health center. They collect data. They use what we have, what we call rapid SMS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they look at their own data.
Okay.
Yeah. So with that rapid SMS, there's danger signs. They can detect a danger sign and record it so that someone at the health center will see that, the district hospital will see that, even at the central level. So they analyze those data and see if there are some gaps and be able to deal with those gaps.
Very interesting. Did you want to add anything, Dr. Abosede?
No, just in the same as she said rightly, in Nigeria too, the cops that we call them, they are, as I said, they also have criteria too,
mm-hmm.
ability to read and write, and they are selected by the village head,
yes.
because they are respected, they are trusted, so that the caregivers is mix freely with them, so they'll be able to provide the service.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, the agitation has been that there is no free lunch anywhere. That yes, people have been saying that
yes,
for us to really get their commitment,
yes,
they need to be paid something. And I want to enjoy the submission from Rwanda. I've heard about that. They have not been given income generating. I think that's the way Nigeria should also be looking to empower them so that they'll be able to continue to provide the service.
Very interesting. We like these discussions because we can learn lessons from each other, right?
Yeah.
Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you on the program. And we thank our guest, Dr. Abosede Adeniran with Nigerian Ministry of Health, and Dr. Jacqueline Umunyana. She is with the USAID's flagship maternal and child survival program in Rwanda. I am your host, Lina Omudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Munganyi, Abigail Belai with the news, and Skip, our engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Tuned for Africa News tonight.